I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. My guest today is Rebecca Hagman. Rebecca and her husband own and operate Cultivate 712, which has become a catch-all for many of the cultural events that take place in Waco. We discuss the work of Blecq Larratt, the famous French stencil artist who painted walls in Waco this past week, as well as her plans for taking Cultivate 712 even higher in the coming year. But first, it's the Residential Recap with Austin Hooper. He is our residential real estate expert who comes on monthly to ascertain what is happening in the Waco housing market. Hooper, you're a very well-connected guy, and you recently had an interesting conversation.
Yeah. Just yesterday, I was having lunch with a mortgage buddy of mine, and I was just asking him about what's been going on lately from his perspective. And he said, you know, since the election a week and a half ago or so, they've had more activity in their office than they had the 2 months prior. So, and we kind of see this across multiple industries. Things kind of cool off a little bit when you're coming up against a big election. And so now that that's behind us, people are getting back out into the market, looking for houses, wanting to put their houses on the market. So it's been encouraging, especially from the sort of, we talked a couple weeks ago about the market breadth that we experienced here in Waco lasted a little bit longer than it typically would. And I think the election had a big, played a big role in that. So to see that things are churning again is encouraging. I think there's an aspect for the home buyers wanting to get into their new home before the holidays. There's still plenty of time to do that. So I think that's playing a part in that as well.
I bought a house in December last year, and I loved getting to be in it for Christmas.
There you
experience
go.
The first Christmas inside the new home.
It's really special.
What happens in D.C., Hooper, you're right. It affects what's happening here, and we've seen that interest rates are starting to creep up. What kind of assistance is there for first-time home buyers?
Sure, yeah. So interest rates are, I think, compared to a year ago, they're about a full percentage point higher. So significant, but still historically very low. I don't want people to get scared that it's a bad time to buy a house. Certainly not the case. And in recent months, we have seen a few different down payment assistance programs pop back up, which is really great for first-time home buyers. And by the way, the definition they use of first-time home buyer is someone that hasn't owned a home in the last 3 years. So you don't have to technically be a first-time home buyer. It's just that three-year qualification. So, you know, with the ability to roll in your closing costs to the sales price through seller concessions, and then this down payment assistance programs that are out there, you can get into a brand new home for relatively, you know, little cash out of pocket.
People are always trying to find ways to save themselves money. One that's become pretty popular recently is the idea of a granny pad or a tiny home, what is known as ADUs, accessory dwelling units. They've become very popular in cities like San Francisco and in Vancouver, where property rates are so high. Are you starting to hear anybody in Waco discussing tiny homes?
Absolutely. I've had a couple of clients from earlier this year who were looking for a house where they could either put a tiny home in their backyard for roommates or family members or whatever. And then I've also had a handful of conversations from different investors or people kicking around the idea of, hey, do you think a tiny home development could work in Waco? So I have been hearing a lot of buzz about that.
And do you think it could work?
I think it could. I do think it clearly it's working in other cities. Whether or not Waco is ready for that, I'm not sure. But the more conversations we start having about it and just the interest that I've been hearing from both sides, both people looking for that and developers looking to do something like that, I think that's a sign that maybe Waco is ready for that.
Residential real estate expert Austin Hooper casting the vision for Waco in 2019 by bringing us the residential recap, recapping all the markets and all the activity. Austin, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot and sharing some of your knowledge.
Thanks, Meek. Appreciate it.
I'm now joined in studio by our commercial real estate expert, Greg Gleim, for the segment, What's Happening Here? Greg, let's answer an email from Travis in Woodway who says, I'm getting thirsty. I've heard a lot about breweries coming to downtown Waco, but haven't seen a lot of activity. Give us an idea of what could be on the horizon for our fellow craft beer lovers.
Yeah, it's been exciting over the last couple months. There's been a number of brewers come into town, in looking around, and you know there's the Waco Ale Company on Austin that's going in, and that was really my first experience working directly with a craft brewer, and so I got a little insight into the business. And it seems since then it's kind of snowballed, and there's been a number of other prospects looking.
So the Waco Ale Company, that'll be on Austin Avenue on the 900 block, right?
That's right. Okay, yeah, cool. Right next to Hay Sugar Candy. It goes right in between Hay Sugar Candy and Adorn there on Austin. And we're actually working on another deal just up the street from that, closer to 11th in Austin, in a 12,000-15,000 foot retail space with another brewer that'll have a neat concept. I've been very excited looking at kind of preliminary plans and working through with them right now.
12,000 to 15,000 square feet is huge. This is gonna be a massive operation.
It is, and it's the way they've got it set up is you walk down the hallway and you've got big glass, and so you'll see the big brewing tanks, and they'll kind of walk you through each step of the brewing process. And you know, this last Christmas I was up in St. Louis and went through a very similar type brewery in that area, and it was fun. It was the whole family went. It wasn't like a bar scene. It was kind of family oriented, and that's kind of the concept that I see them bringing here, and I think it's going to be an exciting one.
That's one thing that they do so well at Balcones, where not only are you there to drink terrific whiskey, but you can see the process, and it's in a family friendly, clean, sterile environment. So that'll be really cool to kind of get the veil lifted behind the brewing process and get to see some of it in actuality. Over at 8th and Jackson, there's a little international flair coming.
Yeah, and you know, right as I was saying, Waco Ale was my first. About at the same time, I got to meet a group of guys from the Czech Republic, and they bought that building at 8th and Jackson, and they're going to do a Czech-style beer in there. And so I laugh. I tell the story that the first time I met him, he told me that his beer is so good you could live off of it. You didn't need to eat any food. You could just live off his beer. And thinking it was a joke, I laughed it off, but there's some truth behind it. So it's a completely different style beer. I was talking to someone who's had similar type beer over there. It's a whole different process, but they're going to have a similar operation and having the big tanks. And MBO go into about an 8,000 or 9,000 foot building over there and wash the operation. So it's exciting.
Czech style pilsners are on tap over there at 8th and Jackson here in a few months. One final one that's coming into town is over a little bit on Washington.
Yeah, and I had made the joke earlier. They really snuck into town. I didn't hear that they were looking, and I heard it announced. I saw it in the Trib when it was announced. And so I guess what I've kind of gathered is, you know, as soon as one sticks their stake in downtown, there's more that come, and they like being around each other. It makes kind of a community, and so having Balcones and the Czech Brewery and Waco Ale Company and the other one on Austin, I mean, having all these come in, it's nice having the density of breweries, and when you look at other cities, it's similar in other places, so it's nice to see that we're catching up now.
A family from Temple is teaming up to start Southern Roots over there on 8th and Washington, so we're not that far from having a pretty well laid out pub crawl in downtown Waco through all these terrific brew brothers.
We might be able to do these interviews downtown. Some of those now, right?
I like where you're thinking. Greg, we've heard about these different beer drinking establishments in downtown. Right there next to Milo on Franklin and 11th Street is one more vacant space that could be an opportunity for someone who wants to keep going with this beer drinking theme.
Yeah, you're right. It's right in the, I'll call it the beer drinking district, right? You've got Balcones across the street and Milo right there. There's 1,600 feet available on the corner. Obviously, Milo is very conscious of who goes in there. We've had a number of prospects looking at it. We have a couple prospects looking at it currently, and we're really after a great complimentary use for not only the area, but to be in there right next door to Milo.
Travis and Woodway, you will not be thirsty when you come to downtown in the coming months. Greg Gleim with What's Happening Here. Thank you so much for sharing your commercial real estate expertise.
Yep, thank you.
The entrepreneurial spirit that's spreading across Waco has infected a classroom at Acton Academy. That's where students have been preparing all semester long for this Saturday's Children's Business Fair at the downtown Waco Farmers Market. Christina Baucom is one of the program's directors.
They have spent this past season coming up with their businesses, and they have an opportunity on Saturday to open up for a one-day marketplace and sell their product, and it's all child, kid-run, kid-led, We ask that no parents are involved in any part of the process, from making their product, coming up with their product, and selling their product at the fair.
Acton Academy is a modern-day one-room schoolhouse featuring a Montessori-style teaching method that mixes students at different skill levels and equips them with practical tools for the modern world.
Every 6 weeks, our students do a different quest. And this particular 6 weeks at our school, we've been doing entrepreneurship. So the kids have learned the steps of building and creating a business and then launching their business.
The students were able to utilize the entrepreneurial ecosystem that's been budding in downtown over the past few years. They asked questions when they attended 1 Million Cups, where they got to talk to small business owners and get advice about their own projects. They learned about graphic design and printing during a tour of Hole in the Roof, and even got to visit with a former Downtown Depot guest.
We walked down to Gather, and Sarah at Gather, the owner there, was gracious and gave the kids just great feedback on owning a storefront and how that was different.
An entrepreneur can only be as successful as the community allows, so thanks to these small business owners who helped educate the students. Be sure to swing by the farmers market this Saturday from 9 to 1 to sample the students' cupcakes or camel apples, or maybe even buy some handmade jewelry for a loved one. Let's get that Christmas shopping done early this year and keep those dollars inside the county. I'm now joined in studio by Rebecca Hagman of Cultivate 712. Rebecca and her husband Jeremy have been owning and operating the space. She directs the programming there. Welcome to Downtown Depot.
Thank you for having me on. I'm really glad to be here.
Tell me a little bit about your Waco history.
So we just moved here July of last year, so 2017, and we love it. We get asked a lot, you know, why did we move here? And I'm really proud to be able to say we chose it. We didn't move here for a job or any specific thing that brought us here. We looked around the nation and wanted to live someplace that we felt like was culturally on the rise, where we could make an impact. I'd worked in nonprofits for a long time. My husband was a teacher. And so we had both had a dream of really having an impact wherever we worked. And living in Southern California, we had just seen our efforts kind of feel a little bit like spit in the bucket. And I had grown up in a town about this size. I grew up in my teen years in Colorado Springs, just south of Denver. And so they were 125,000 people when I grew up there, and they are now like over 500,000. And so I kind of knew what that felt like to have like this many people in a city. And so we were looking for a city around this size. And then the more I looked at Waco's history, I mean, what a rich history we have. There's just such rich cultural soil here. And my passion is community building. That's been something that I've wanted to see happen since I was like 13. Like when I was 13, I was dreaming up these like fancy cupcake shops that I was going to have because all of us were into cupcakes. And then when I was 18, it was a bookstore. And then, you know, on through my career, I was always thinking through like, oh, if I had a space, I would do it differently in this way, because I wanted to think through like what would cultivate conversation and connection and buy-in, give people a sense that they had ownership in it. And so so that was kind of like in the back of our minds, a dream. Of course, everything that's happened since then has wildly exceeded our expectations. But yeah, that's why we moved here. We moved here because we wanted to see if we could make an impact in a smaller pond, as it were.
What's your professional background?
I went to USC in 2002 and graduated in 2006. So I was there during these heydays of football championships. And always I've realized now, like, as you know, you get into your 30s, I'm like, I've always been like a hustler, like just like pushing as hard as I could against whatever to be a part of whatever was happening, wanting to have a big impact. And so I worked for the football team, and the coach at the time, Pete Carroll, hired me to run his nonprofit right out of college. And so so I kind of got trained by fire, not just trial by fire, and was operating in the community space in South Central LA, coordinating like people who were helping gang members in recovery, working with organizations who were like, some of them were providing daycare services, some were providing like senior care services. And like we kind of decided that we would be, as an organization, like a a hub for all those things, because that's what it really needed, was like kind of a famous hub. And so we used the fame in the city. Like, we had a partnership with like Will Ferrell and Sharon Stone, and Pete Carroll at the time just had a lot of credibility.
Yeah.
And we kind of leveraged that celebrity into paying attention to all these smaller causes in South Central and help them come together and meet each other. We would hold these big community forums. And so I was doing that at 21, 22, and I was the interim director. So it was a crazy opportunity. It was also a crazy amount of responsibility for a young person.
And it's probably something that if you looked at it on paper, you would have been pretty scared about. Mm-hmm. But you just do a little bit every day. You have positive increments, and then you realize, well, I've been managing a nonprofit with – multiple arms and lots of money in the bank.
Yeah.
And I can do it.
Yeah. It was pretty empowering. And so that was, like I said, back in 2006, I did that until 2008 or nine, and then had a career in nonprofits. And then I would go back and forth between that and event management and marketing for like multifamily real estate and stuff like that. And so I had a lot of experience managing physical spaces, mm-hmm. and then I had this heart for seeing a community thrive. And so when we came here, we saw just the great architecture, so many great buildings, as you know. We were like, okay, wouldn't it be great if we could have an event space? And then we were used to seeing art around because we were coming from San Diego and LA and just lots of access to beautiful art. And so we started asking around, like, oh, well, where do we find the local artists? And there just wasn't really a clear place. And so we started thinking, okay, well, then we'd have this art center space, and it would like actually like go hand in hand with the event space so that you could see the art, and it would like there'd be creating dialogue and interaction, and then we'd also have events there. And so we had a dream that was just buying maybe like a smaller building elsewhere, like a little bit more on the fringes. And then we were just privileged to walk into 712 and see that Fiona was already basically doing something very similar in a pop-up. And we met TJ and Leonor Moyen, who owned the building at 712, or owned the building. And they were like, yeah, we're going to figure out how to sell this thing to you because we love your vision. And we were like, is this real life? What just happened?
I think that that's such an easy way to explain how you can have an idea of what you're trying to do, and then you can be surprised by the generosity of someone else.
Absolutely.
You have a vision for what this is going to be, and you also have limited capital, limited expertise. But then someone else comes to your aid and says, hey, I love what you're casting out here, the vision for the future of our city. And you were able to sell that to the Irmoyans.
Yeah, it was really, you know, I think, and also I got to acknowledge just the hand of God. Like, absolutely. Like, there's no way that, like, that was going to be happening at the same time that we moved here and that they had kind of, like, decided that they wanted to see the building do that. They'd run through a few offers. Like, they'd imagined the building elsewhere, you know, going in a different direction. But they were ready, too. They were like, you know what? Yeah, I think we could just, like support this happening. And so we leased from them until we really had our feet under us, which was so generous of them. And then we were able to buy it this last April. So just so exciting. And yeah, you're right. It is so true that you can have this vision and this dream and it still surprises you when people are like, yeah, that's a good one.
What's the idea behind cultivation?
We sat on the name for a while, trying to think through what was it that we really wanted to say. And it was actually my sister who came to me, and she was like, you know, the thing you're talking about is cultivation. You're talking about this idea that you're growing something, that you're feeding something, that you're elevating something. And as soon as she said it, I was like, yes, that is it. Because it is absolutely at the heart of what we want to do. We want to see things succeed and grow, and we want the space to feel very much like rich soil for the arts, for food culture, for music culture, and I think that's what I feel best equipped to do, is to be like a faithful cultivator. We talked a lot about wanting to build trust. That's something we feel like is super important for both the artists and anyone else who's taking these really vulnerable risks, right? Any of us who are creatives, or even just entrepreneurs, like, you know, you might be creative in the realm of business. We're really familiar with vulnerability, and so for me, when I was talking to my sister and we were coming up with the name, it was this idea that I really wanted to earn people's trust. And she was like, so you're kind of like cultivating their trust. And I was like, yeah. So I think while I'm cultivating their trust, you know, they're giving me the privilege of cultivating perhaps like their art or their sales process or some of the business end that maybe people are less, maybe just confident in. everyone's really actually quite good at it once they get the hang of it. But I think that there's some sewing in of confidence and just help there.
Because of a dearth of art galleries or dance studios or music venues in downtown, Cultivate has become a catch-all for a lot of these sort of varied programming. Do you feel that that is emblematic of Cultivate, that Cultivate is where everything spurts out of? Or do you see Cultivate in the future being more focused on one thing or another?
One of the challenges we have on the marketing side is that our mission is relatively broad, obviously. You know, to cultivate the art and culture of Waco is our mission. It's pretty broad. But that's served us really well so far because it's allowed us to be really responsive to the needs of the community. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully over the coming years, there will be partners that will rise up in the community and their identity will meet the needs of the community in new ways. And then we'll be able to shift to meet needs, you know, or maybe focus in to meet needs that are still evident that we can meet. So that might mean that we have a new music venue. And so maybe music would become something that would be more peripheral, of course, still always welcome. Or, you know, we've dreamed of having a commercial kitchen in the back so that we could have like catering and stuff like that. And so if we go that direction, then maybe we'll see the food culture blossom in the space a little bit differently. And so we would embrace that as well. So I think...
But you don't have a target that you're going towards. Right now, you're just kind of saying, we're going to be faithful to be a space for the artistic community in Waco, whatever that may be at the current time.
Yeah, I would say that's true. I think we're too emerging as a culture for us to really be able to forecast ahead and say, yeah, I think this is where we'll be in 5 years. I would say the only like steadfast goals that we have are that we start hitting our event booking goals, because really that's like the meat and potatoes of like what keeps our doors open. And so we have like definite goals there that we're going to see like more event bookings over the coming year.
If you have a holiday party or a rehearsal dinner, Cultivate 712 is a ideal space for an event like that. And I love what you're saying, Rebecca, about in the future, maybe there is a music venue, maybe there's another art gallery, and you find ways to flex with that. Because ultimately, I know you're not the kind of person who wants to live in a city that has one great art gallery.
Yeah, no way.
You want to live in a city that has 10 great art galleries. As someone who came from Los Angeles, you understand that the more, the merrier. And you guys really have embraced the spirit of collaboration over competition.
Yeah, thank you. I really appreciate that. I think that's so important. And I really do think that's one of the privileges of living in a city this size, is that, you know, we get to collaborate. There isn't this like saturated market where we have to like, you know, carve out a niche for ourselves. So it's a real privilege.
What has been the biggest takeaway from a year in Cultivate? What did you think this place was when Jeremy and you opened the doors, and what has it evolved into?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's been such an honor to get to a year. It's actually been really powerful, and I didn't expect it, but it's ushered in a fair amount of reflection in a great way. I think when we opened, there was such a sense of the risk. There was such a sense that, you know, who knows what's going to happen? Like, who knows if people will actually embrace this or not? And there was this, you know, very small community, like a dozen people who were like, yeah, we're going to partner with you. We're going to show up and we're going to paint your walls with you. And we're going to put our up art here, even though we don't know who you are. And so that was such an intimate and sweet beginning. And now kind of a year later, especially after having all the press around the Banksy piece, it feels like our identity is growing separate from us now. I think it's probably like a little bit what it would feel like to have a baby. Like you have a child and for a little bit they get to be really tied to you and they're kind of an extension of you. And then you start realizing they have their own personality and their own strengths and their own personhood. And I think in a lot of ways, because Cultivate, we have offered it and we've cultivated it to be about a reflection of the community, not a reflection of Jeremy and I personally as much. I mean, of course, we're in there, but it's, you know, we're trying to reflect something larger than ourselves. It is starting to develop its own personality. And I'm just really overwhelmed by how people have embraced it and decided to make it their date spot on First Fridays and the place they come to hear new music on Wednesdays, and that people have gravitated towards our dream of having a wedding there. Or we had our very first wedding this last Sunday, full wedding, where we had both the ceremony and the
wow
and the reception. And I came home on just cloud nine. It was like I had worked my butt off. I was like, I ended up being the wedding coordinator and cutting the cake and doing everything, my feet were so sore, but I was so happy because that was like my dream, was that I would have this space that would like create this rich, rich context, I guess is the word I'm looking for really meaningful events in people's lives. And it doesn't have to be a wedding. It could also just be a great date or a first date or just a great time to show your kids art, you know, those like memories that kids have. But I really think the fact that these rich moments are happening in a place that we've sewed into just feels like amazing. And it's really given me a lot of hope for the next year. We're doing a little campaign, Reflect and Radiate, for our birthday. And the idea is that, you know, as we reflect on our year, we're asking everyone to reflect with us on their own year. And we want to radiate with a sense of renewed hope and purpose. And we're just inviting other people to do that with us as they dream into the next year. And that is what I feel. I just feel radiant. I know that sounds so nerdy even as I say it out loud, but I'm just thrilled. And it really is so necessary that we are enthusiastic about these kind of endeavors because they take so much from us. And I think, you know, so many entrepreneurs in town can relate to that. It's like so many late nights and early mornings and your phone is always ringing. But because it is so full of joy, it's so worthwhile.
You're hearing from Rebecca Hagman, director of Cultivate 712, the gallery on Austin Avenue. Even though it's relatively new, you guys seem to have had tremendous success in pulling in really interesting programming. One piece is the piece by Banksy. The French stencil artist Black Larat has been here this week painting on walls throughout Waco. How did these come about?
I'm really stoked to be able to say we just asked. And I think this is a credit to Waco. Brian Grafe, who's both the collector and the project manager, he's the one who has the Banksy, and he's the one who manages with Black Leroy. And he said yes. You know, he looked at our city, our size, and where we're headed, and he said yes. And so I think that's really to Waco's credit.
That's such a artist move to just go for it mm-hmm. and hope that it works out.
Totally. Totally.
But I think that it is a tremendous amplifier of Waco's culture that you guys have been faithfully building and many others before you mm-hmm. as well.
Absolutely.
To start to have some national spotlight and people with recognition in the art world at large to say, hey, Waco is a viable place. I would love to show my piece there.
Absolutely. And we are so proud to see so many artists coming here. There are actually artists moving here, and like Ty Nathan Clark and Sean Oswald, artists who are coming from other cities in the U.S. who really have been developing a career. Brian Broadway. And they have great art, and they're really elevating the professionalism of our art scene. And I think to that point, just to mention, like, the Professional Artists of Central Texas, PACT, just put on this huge Art on the Brazos thing at the Hilton. It was a big three-day art festival, and it was such a wild success. I mean, really well-received for its first year. And I think the fact that those things are happening in town is just so indicative of the fact that we are on the rise, you know, and our culture is important, and what we're shaping has legs, you know, it's really going somewhere.
What is some of the upcoming programming for Cultivate 712, and how can the community best support you guys?
Oh, thanks for that. Well, I'll answer the second question first. Supporting us is really word of mouth, so bringing your friends, letting people come and experience what we have there. It is diverse. We have dance class, we have yoga, we have all these fun pop-up dinners that we do. And so just kind of getting in the know, like checking out what we have coming up is really helpful. And definitely, you know, considering us for your next holiday event or birthday party, we have multiple spaces. So you can do something small or big. But considering us for your next event is the best way you can support us. And then, of course, buying local art. So we're really proud of this, and I hadn't mentioned this before, but 65% of any art you buy in a gallery goes back to the artist. And so that's part of us kind of staying true to our mission, that we want to cultivate the arts, and part of that is making sure they have enough money to actually keep painting or sculpting or whatever they do. And so that's the other thing, is just buying art at the space is really important. So.
Rebecca, thank you so much for coming on Downtown Depot and telling us a little bit about your story.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been a privilege.
Thanks again to Rebecca Hagman, Austin Hooper, Greg Glime, Christina Bauckham, and the kids at Acton Academy, and for you for tuning in. And a special thanks goes to Kevin Tankersley of Waco and Magazine. He interviewed me for the November issue, where I got to explain the origins of Pokios and Waco Business News and talked about my vision for the city. Find Waco Business News on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter to read that article, and of course, if you have any feedback, I'd love to hear from you. I'm Austin Meek with Waco Business News, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.